Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to this edition of Blog Business Success here on Blog Talk Radio. And I'm your host, Wayne Hurlburt. And tonight our guest is Roxanne Emmerich. And she's a multiple award-winning entrepreneur. And she's the best-selling author of the visionary and business culture-changing book, Thank God It's Monday: How to Create a Workplace You and Your Customers Love. And Roxanne will share secrets for making your workplace fun and a joy for employees to be on the job. You will learn how to improve employee morale, lift spirits, and create a positive employment atmosphere. Her tips for removing bad talk and gossip, and how to replace it with happiness and celebration. And you'll discover why a happy workplace makes for a more profitable business. As CEO of the Emmerich Group, Roxanne has consulted with hundreds of the top performers among financial institutions, as well as leaders from almost every industry. Her book, Profit Growth Banking, has been called the Bible of Successful Business in That Industry. And Sales and Marketing Management magazine named her one of the nation's 12 most requested speakers, and she's a three-time recipient of the Entrepreneur of the Year Award. She's renowned for her ability to transform ho-hum workplaces into massive, results-oriented, bring-it-on environments, and igniting a give more passion among employees and managers that catapults performance and boosts morale as well as profits to new levels. A National Speaker Hall of Fame inductee, Roxanne is noted by Sales and Marketing Management magazine as one of the most requested speakers in the nation. Welcome to our show, Roxanne.
Thank you for having me on, and it's only just a few days left until Monday.
Well, that's right, and there's nothing more exciting than Monday, right?
Well, you know, it's okay to say thank God it's Friday, too. You know, my concern is that for most people, most of us at some point in our career, and usually it's about the first 2 weeks in the job, lose our passion to be extraordinary, and we lose that new job feel, that feel that we have when we start off and our shoes are shine and our clothes are pressed and we decide to set the world on fire. Then about a couple of weeks we discover we work with a lot of people with issues and they're whiners and complainers and they're all shooting wildly for mediocrity. And about within 2 weeks we usually lower our sights and then we get stuck there for about 20 years. And so the Thank God It's Monday book is about how to get that back and how to get it for everyone that you work around.
The book's more than just about having fun at work, right?
Yeah, you know, because fun is not frivolous. It's more than fun. It's about focused, massive results and celebrating those breakthroughs along the way. And it's also about making all the dysfunctional behaviors go away that make us all crazy and suck our energy dry when we walk in on Monday morning because we can't stand being around anymore. And so it's showing the average person how they can step into their company, get it turned around. And based on the work we've been doing with clients for many, many years, we have many clients that grew more in the next 30 days than they had the previous 10 years combined just by applying these principles.
What makes a workplace exciting where people want to come to work and where customers are thrilled to return and to send their friends?
Well, I always think it's like a magnetic marketing machine. When you walk into a workplace, you can feel, are these people alive? Are they passionate? Are they good to each other? Are they good? Do they care about customers? Do they really care about customers? Or are they just caring enough to see if they can get by with? You can feel that. And when you walk in and it feels great, you walk out thinking, man, I got to go back. I don't care what they charge. I don't care if they charge a premium. Not only am I coming back, I'm bringing all of my friends. And so, and that's why culture, which you can't touch and you can't feel, you can't really quantify in a lot of ways. You just feel it, you know it when you walk into a place. Culture is the leading predictor of future growth and profitability. And so in times like this, who can afford not to be paying attention when Gallup, I think they did some research that showed that one out of every three payroll dollars is lost due to disengaged employees. It's a huge bottom line issue that can't be afforded during a recession.
And of course, well-run businesses where people are excited and where they genuinely like one another are also more likely to treat the customers better as well, and that, of course, is more profitable, right?
Well, and that's the point. And you know, the reality is that when was the last time somebody called home and said, honey, today I performed average? I mean, we don't do that. We call home when we've kicked some butt and taken some names and we're having a fall, making massive changes happen. You know, we all want to be a part of something extraordinary, something that feels good, something that's of service. Nothing warms our hearts more than being of service. I work with all industries and have worked with, you know, the Lockheeds and the Mercks and the Microsofts and such of the world, but I've also have a great following in the community banking world where things are very, very measurable and very, very fast. And it always astonishes me how quickly we can get a bottom line result, and how quick. And but what really amazes me is the very next day after we do this kick butt kickoff process, which is discussed in the book, that customers line up and they say, "What just happened here? I've been banking here for 18 years. Everything's different. Everybody's nice. Everybody's doing backflips to help me. What is going on?" And they're having fun too. And the word spreads, and of course, it's an amazing way to impact business and grow your business.
We often hear business owners and managers say that they're too busy for changing company culture. There just isn't time for it, as they have a business to run. What do you say to that person?
Well, I would suggest that maybe only the fun survive. I mean, I don't know. You know, there's a lot of companies right now that are very morose. There's been layoffs, and people are in this abysmal mood, and everybody's just doing what they need to do to get by and wondering if they're going to be next. And what's happening is that the joy has left the workplace. And yet the only way out of this thing is the joy. You know, mentioning that we do a lot in the banking industry, the Fed just recently predicted that the banking industry will lose $599 billion this year, which is more than small change. And we have the vast majority of our banking clients having record quarters and record years. Well, go figure. But part of what we teach them is, before the recession started, I called every CEO and I said, make sure to send this in the memo at the beginning of the year to your employees that people will be talking about a recession this year. We did not sign up. Recessions are when good companies pull ahead. We're going to outthink, outstrategize, out customer service, out create value. We are going to be massive during times like this, and therefore the recession doesn't need to touch us. And that's the kind of thinking that needs to be in every industry.
I've often maintained that a recession is a real opportunity for well-run companies to take advantage of their competitors who will be cutting back on their marketing, who will have terrible morale, of course, because everybody's thinking that they're going to be the next on the chopping block, and that they're basically handing you their customers for free.
You know, that is the absolute truth. People are so busy licking their wounds that they've forgotten about their customers. And the reality is, customers still want to buy things, and they still want to have people cater to them. And a lot of customers need more things than they've ever needed before. I heard a sales trainer not too long ago saying, oh, my business is way down. He said, nobody's buying any sales training. I'm like, are you kidding me? People need revenue. The best way to get that is sales. What are you thinking? And so the recession happens between the years. And so one of the things we need to do is clean out the cobwebs out of that area and start thinking about how do I really, really, really add some powerful value to customers so that they really succeed. One of the key concepts that we talk about and I cover in the Think Ads Monday book is that customer satisfaction is a really lousy goal. The only goal we should be talking about is customer success. That's when it's fun. That's when it's exciting. And so customer success is that you're kind of like a pit bull. You bite in and you don't let go until that customer is successful. If you treat your business that way and treat your clients that way, you will have more clients than you can handle, and they will always pay you premium pricing.
Yes, because customer satisfaction for many organizations is translates into English as, well, this person didn't complain, so they must be satisfied.
Yeah, I think there's some truth to that, and the reality is that, you know, what, 68% of people leave leave a business because they feel that they've been treated in an indifferent way, like they don't show they care. I think part of the whole magic of the Thank God It's Money, one of the key principles we teach in the book and in the philosophy and in the kickoff is show you care. Always show you care. Always, always, always show that you care. And because when you're doing that, you can have the huge breakthroughs. And so, you know, part of it is, does everyone there have a deep desire to make a difference? And if not, how do you get that shifted and fast?
An interesting side note here on Twitter today, I saw someone place a tweet that they had gone into a fast food takeout restaurant and they stood there for 5 minutes and nobody bothered to come and take their order. I would think that that is not a thank God it's Monday workplace.
You know what's so funny about that? It wasn't all that many years ago when fast food was still kind of a novel idea and people still went to old restaurants. That idea is not that many decades long ago. But now we live in a sped up world, and so if you go into a fast food restaurant and you're waiting 45 seconds, you're crazy. You're crazed about the whole thing. You want service and now, and so the expectations have gotten so much higher. And I would challenge business owners and managers and leaders and anybody in business to grasp that idea and say, how are we going to be faster? How are we going to be better? How are we going to deliver more? How can you know what does that customer really want? What didn't they even think about that they may want that would add great value? Because it's that kind of thinking. There's a lot of businesses doing strategic planning these days, but not many businesses doing strategic thinking. It's that kind of thinking that will take them through to an amazing kind of result.
For our hard-nosed bottom line thinkers out there, there's definitely a tangible, real bottom line benefit to having a thank God it's Monday type workplace, isn't there?
There's a huge bottom line impact. Let me just tell you a few stories. We had one bank that FDIC had come in about a year and a half ago, and we had just signed on to take them on, and the FDIC came in and told them, you're in trouble, you need to lay off a third of your employees. Well, they called me. They were bent out of shape. We hadn't even started the kickoff yet. We were scheduled another week out. And they said, what do we do? What do we do? And I said, well, for goodness sakes, let's at least wait through the kickoff and see what happens. But don't lay them off now. I mean, you know, within a month, if we can't get this thing turned around, you'll have to do something. But like, let's turn around and fast. And so the miracle happened, and what was wonderful was FDIC came back in again now because it's been a year later, and they said, what have you just done here? This is unbelievable, the results you're getting. You don't need us to be hanging around here. There's other banks in trouble. We're going to leave you guys alone. Well, that kind of story gets told over and over and over again, and we also work with very many companies in the top 5% of performers within their industry, and they're the really fun ones to work with because they seem limitless. They don't think there's a little bit more. They think there's a whole lot more, and they're right. And so no matter how good their customer service is, there's a lot more. No matter how good their people are, they can be so much better. No matter how good what they're delivering is, they can do it so much better. And so it's that desire to always be raising that bar, not incrementally like the old 70s and 80s philosophy, but powerfully moving it forward in an astrological amount of force.
Thinking in terms of quantum leaps forward as opposed to a few steps forward.
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, the quality movement was a great thing in many, many respects. It taught people how to think about process and systems, and that's really, really important. But where I think it held us back as business people, is it taught us to think that all changes need to be small and incremental. In times like this, you can't afford small incremental changes. Sometimes you need to go from 0 to 60 in 3 seconds. And that's the fun, and that's the juice. And so as long as we don't limit our thinking to think that we can't do that, everything is good, but we really got to make sure that we're up to what's possible because our old business models are not serving us right now. Many of them just have to be thrown out the window, and stronger business models need to come in.
One of the really intriguing aspects of the concept was how one person can make a real difference in just one day. Is that immediate transformation of a business realistic?
Over and over and over again for 20 years. In fact, we always get these letters from CEOs after we do the Kick Butt Kickoff, which is explained in the Thank God It's Monday book, and they go, it's a miracle. Well, that was the point. We set out to do miracles. We're not going to stop unless we do a miracle. That is the point. And so what we're doing is we're showing people how to create the miracle and make that happen in a very, very powerful way.
I really like the fact that you can show tangible bottom line results within one day and within one week, because that will really motivate everyone else to get involved. Because if it's a really slow process, well, if we do something now, it might help us in 6 months. Nobody's even going to remember it.
And I don't think people can afford things that take a long time. I remember years ago being called in by a Fortune 500 company. They wanted me to do this change initiative for them and roll it out over 2 years. And they wanted to. And they had been studying it for 2 years, and they were just about ready to embark. And they wanted me to contract with them for 2 years. And I'm like, are you kidding me? I could come and fix this in a day. And they're like, no. This is 2 years. We have a committee. The committee meets. First we come in, we study. Then we do these things, and we roll it out. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, no, I'm not your person. And so these are the times when you can't afford people who aren't about massive and immediate results. You know, you could get away with that kind of stuff 10 years ago, but you can't get away with that now. Now is the time when you need to just blast it forward and fast.
Many employees are going to say, well, I'm not very high up on the ladder. I don't really have any authority to do much of anything. How can an employee, regardless of their level, initiate some change?
That's the part I love. There's a woman who is running a billion-dollar financial organization that when we started working with them, she was pretty far down the food chain. In fact, she came in as a bookkeeper without a college degree, and now she's running one of the fastest-growing, most profitable financial institutions in their state. And but what had happened was when we started working with them, she was more to like a VP kind of level and quickly got moved up to president and then the CEO position because she took this on and really made it happen. Now, she could still be in that bookkeeping department, but she had a philosophy about how to move it through. But I saw one organization I work with on the East Coast, they had a guy who works the parking lot. Now, some people just think they're working the parking lot and they're parking cars and taking money and doing those things. He saw his job as being ambassador. People would come in and he says, oh, you're here to see Connie today. Yep, she's waiting for you. She'll be looking forward to seeing you soon. How's that new house of yours? Okay, and the next person comes in, boom, he'd know their name and he would greet them and say, you're here to see Joe. Joe's expecting you. Well, that's a whole different level. Can you imagine pulling into a parking lot and seeing this guy who you know, is going to that level when everybody else is just taking tickets? That's the kind of thinking that has to happen to pull us through these tough economic times. When people start embracing that, the power happens. And so I've had client after client after client where I wasn't brought in by the CEO. Now, they got me through to the CEO, but they're the ones who took the book concepts and said, here, we need to do this. I want to be a part of this. I want to lead this. Let's go. And when their boss said, no, you don't understand, they'd come back the next day as if they had a hearing loss and say, listen, I want to do this. I know I talked about this yesterday, but we need to do this. And so I'm coming back again to ask. And if they say no, they'd come back the next day. And so it's that kind of resilience where somebody just keeps taking a stand for the company. Those are the people who move to the top ranks. Those are the people who say, it's not okay with me to work in an organization that's about to fail. It's not okay with me that my friends are being laid off. That's not okay with me. Nothing makes me angrier than when that happens, where it's because of mismanagement that people get laid off. There is no excuse.
And, of course, many of the positions that are often taken for granted or are not even considered to be all that important, as you mentioned, someone who parks cars, the receptionist who answers the phone, the people that are on the front desk, all of those sort of contact with customer positions are, I would argue, are some of the most important positions, perhaps the most important positions in the organization.
Because they're the ones that have the contact, because they're the ones that create the magic, absolutely. And if they're disengaged, nothing magical happens because they're the ones that the client gets to be in contact with and gets to make all kinds of decisions based upon how they behave and how they show they care. So I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, there's nothing like calling a one business and having it sound like you've interrupted their entire day, and then turn around and try someone else,
yeah,
and they're happy and glad you called.
I remember years ago, this was many, many years ago, but I was calling around for car insurance, and I would call into an insurance agency, and I'd ask for a quote, and they'd say, well, you'll have to call back. Our agents are all busy. And I'm thinking, no, I don't. That's why competition was invented. And I remember going through about five or six of them, and I thought, man, what would these businesses do with all the additional business they would get if they would just get somebody who, that had a little bit more IQ and a little bit more caring to answer that phone to say, so glad you called. Yes, we absolutely want to make sure that we talk to you. Let me get some basic information. You know, Tom is busy right now, but I'm going to have him call you back right away. Will you be handy at this number? Just that little bit of difference is the only difference that's necessary to double, triple, quadruple that business. And those are the kind of things that are being missed in almost every business in this country.
One of my favorite stories in your book, which of course is evidence that I actually read your book.
I appreciate that. I can tell you did.
Is when the woman went into a number of clothing stores and everyone gave that stock answer, may I help you? And of course she gave the stock response, no, I'm just looking, thanks. And she went into the one to another store where the clerk said, just stay right there, as if she, as her first response was perhaps she'd been mistaken for a shoplifter. And she came back with this beautiful sweater and put it on her and said, if you wear that sweater, you're going to have to beat the men off with a stick. And she, of course, her response then was, how much is the sweater?
Well, that's not just the story. I tell it as a story in the book, but that happened to me. That's my story. When I first moved to Minneapolis, I went to the Mall of America, and I went to 50 or 60 stores all within the first hour, just kind of checking out to see what was all in there, and everyone said, can I help you, can I help you, can I help you? And I would say, no, just looking, no, just looking, no, just looking, until this guy comes with the blue sweater. And not only did I buy that sweater, I bought half the things in the store that day, because this kid knew how to be a giver. And I think, you know, most people in life, live life as if they're a taker, you know. So everything's got to be an even exchange. Okay, you give me, you know, you ask for some help, I give you some help. Yeah, you give me some money, I give you something here. It can't be an even exchange. You always have to give 10 times more value than the cash you receive, and people will beat a path to your door. This kid gave me 10 times more value, and I loaded up my trunk, and everybody else got nothing that day. And that tells you everything about what having a Thank God It's Monday culture does. And that's why I'm hoping that people not only buy the book for themselves, but they buy one for their friend who doesn't like their job. They buy one for a colleague so they can move this along together. And they buy one for the boss and don't just throw it on their desk, but they go in with it and they say, boss, I want to do this. Let's do this together. Let me read this to you. How can we implement chapter one? How can we take chapter two and implement that? I want this to be a movement where people get some changes made and not just think about, isn't this a nice book? And these are the times when we can't afford not to get some movement going.
I think it's one of those books where it would behoove the organization to order a box full of them and hand one out to every person in the organization.
I think that's why the book, the first 3 weeks now, it's been out for 3 weeks, and it's hit the New York Times list for all 3 weeks. It's been the Wall Street Journal list all 3 weeks. It hit number one on Amazon overall. You know, how do you explain that other than the fact that they're doing exactly that? They buy it for everyone and say, we have to do this together. We have to read. It's kind of like Stephen Covey's old Seven Habits book. It's like, you know, it's not a book you read. It's a book that you say, we're doing this together. Let's make this happen.
What if management doesn't support an employee's effort to make change? And indeed, what if other employees don't either and don't see the value of the Thank God It's Monday philosophy?
Well, that happens, and that's reality, and you can count on that. And you don't stop there. This is where you become unstoppable. This is where you say, oh, no, we're going to do this anyway. And so, you know, managers don't automatically become enlightened because they're given the title of management. It just doesn't work that way. And so not every manager is going to be perfect. In fact, I would wager to bet that no manager is going to be perfect. So as an employee, you have to look at that and go, okay, so I have somebody who's not getting this part that I think I get. How am I going to help them get that? See, here's the mistaken belief that we have is if our manager doesn't get something that we're seeing, we think, oh, they're an idiot. Oh, they'll never listen to me. And we play the victim role. Well, this whole book is about not playing the victim role anymore. It's about taking this back to the boss and saying, oh, no, we got to get this. Let me start an initiative. Let me start a little bit of this next week. In fact, if they go to the thankgoditsmonday.com website, they can get free Monday morning audio lessons that last 1 minute. everybody's got 1 minute a week, and they can sit down with their team and listen to it. And my clients tell me that they listen to it together, and they look each other in the eye, and they go, man, we got to work through that one. So it's really practical stuff, like one lesson's on no excuses, how to not ever give an excuse again. What do you say if somebody gives you an excuse? What do you say instead? You know, so the basics of excuses. The next one is on some other, you know, very powerful thing that happens in the workplace that has to be figured out. And so it's a whole series of lessons that aren't just academic. These are practical, fourth grade language, get it done. How do we take the complex and make it simple and get it done kind of philosophies?
We've all worked in organizations where there are bad attitude people that spend all of their time gossiping, sniping at one another, complaining, and so on. And those people, of course, need a reason to change because they've been like that for a long time. How can their attitude be adjusted?
Well, we have a whole chapter on page 141 in the book. We talk about busting the batitudes. So we create a name for that. And, you know, there's a wonderful quote that chapter starts off with. It's by Scott Hamilton. And he says, the only disability in life is a bad attitude. And here's what I say to people when I'm out presenting to a group doing a kick butt kickoff is, listen, that comes from the inside. You know, if you're not happy here, you're not going to be happy someplace else. Because everywhere you go, there will be dweebs, people who don't get it, people with issues. I mean, that's just how it is. And so you have to choose joy where you're at. You've got to choose to work through the relationship issues. You've got to choose to work through the problems. You've got to choose to work through your own limitations about how you can't get things done and start getting something done. And so the batitudes are, it's the people who are crossing their arms and rolling their eyes and giving excuses and gossiping and whining and all those things that just suck us dry. I call them the energy vampires. And, you know, if we have extra time, well, maybe we'll talk about some of the ways that energy vampires suck us dry and what to do with some of those kind of things when they happen so people have the equipment ready to go next time somebody starts sucking the energy out of them on a Monday morning.
Yeah, what would you do with an energy vampire since you mentioned them besides some sort of wooden stake of...
Through the heart, yes, of course.
Yeah.
And some garlic, too. Well, I think that it depends. The prescription needs to match the diagnosis. So it depends on the problem. So, you know, let's just take one at a time here and kind of work through a couple just to kind of get a sense. My big one, the big kahuna of all dysfunctional behaviors in the workplace, the one that just robs everyone dry, is gossip. And what needs to happen, and that's the value of a kick butt kickoff, is you get everybody in the room at the same time and you make agreements. And you have to talk about, listen, when people are gossiping, that's worse than any kind of workplace violence. We may as well bring baseball bats and beat the heck out of each other, and we'll be further ahead at the end because we can at least stitch up the problem. When people gossip, there is no repair for those words. And so let's make an agreement from now on that if I have an issue with Wayne, who am I going to talk to? Wayne, not Joe, not Sally, not Tommy. I'm going to go right to Wayne and say, hey, Wayne, when you did that, it created this mess. From now on, will you do this instead? Do I have a commitment? Which is a very functional way of handling that. But organizations are so dysfunctional, and there's so much adult daycare kind of stuff going on that instead people think, oh, no, I get to put down other people, so I'll just tell everybody about Wayne and how awful he is. And by doing that, I hurt Wayne. I hurt the people I talk to about Wayne because now they're sucked into this mess and they feel horrible about themselves. And I completely deflate my trust anybody has in me because I have just hurt other people, and that's just not okay. And so, you know, learning to have ground rules about, listen, no gossip. And if somebody comes and complains to me about Wayne, all I get to say is, sounds to me like you're making a trip right over to Wayne right now, and please don't ever come back to anybody else about this. Please handle this with Wayne. That's when you start to get a functional workplace.
And, of course, in many workplaces, that sort of behavior is rewarded, and, of course, behavior rewarded is always behavior repeated, especially if the real complainers and backstabbers and so on discover that they move up in the organization because they've managed to sabotage Roxanne.
Well, there's a karma in life. That may work for a while, but eventually those kind of things always come home. And, you know, here's the real question I have for people who do such things. At what level are you willing to sell out your soul? Because at the end of the day, and when you look yourself in the mirror and you're looking in those eyes, do you like what you see? And if you don't like what you see, I don't care what your paycheck is. I don't care what your title is. This is going to come home to haunt. And it will eventually be a financial haunt, but right now it's a spiritual haunt that you can't afford. And so, you know, and what I say to people is, listen, forgive yourselves everything. We've all been jerks. We've all been, every example that I give in that book, I've been that. We've all done these things, and we'll do it again. But when you do it, stop it immediately. Clean up your mess by saying that you're sorry and that you won't do it again, and get on with your life. Because, you know, there's no value in the guilt and shame of worrying about what you used to do. So you had some behaviors, you were slightly unconscious. Well, here's the 2x4 between the eyes. Now that you're awake, now what are your commitments? Great, we'll hold you to that.
Much of the issue we've been talking about is one of communication. How important is improving communication within the organization and also with customers if you're wanting to make some major changes in how things are done around here?
Well, you know, communication is the funniest word in the world because the very word means nothing, doesn't it? I mean, it's like, okay, what does that mean? Does that mean more top-down information? Does it mean more working through conflict? Does it mean more talking through our issues? Does it mean more dissemination of information? Does it mean more bottom-up flow of information? And so I think, you know, everywhere you go, the biggest problem is communication. But the reason it remains a problem is nobody identifies it with any kind of specificity. And so one of the things I'm always teaching clients to be aware of is bringing everything to its simplest and most specific elements. And so until you can say this is what the problem is, this is not what the problem is, then you can start to say, and here's what I'm going to do to make sure that that goes away, which are very, very important pieces to make happen. So the part of it is, yes, communication is the biggest problem, but until you get more specific and say, what really specifically is happening that's causing this problem, well, great, now that we've identified that, now what are the strategies we can use to break through that? And for every one of those strategies, what are the roadblocks we might hit, and what are the strategies to go through those roadblocks? Now you're going to get somewhere. But just talking about as an esoteric word of, oh, we have a communication problem. Yes, we do. Yeah, we've always had that. Yeah, we probably always will, is not going to get you there.
And, of course, most organizations will talk about communication for days and weeks on end. Many of us have even been in retreats where communication was the topic and was never really defined.
And how painful were those? So those are the kind of days where you kind of think, maybe if I could just get sick and call in sick. The days where you have a meeting to have a meeting, those are never the kind of days that you want to be around a workplace. And that's why, you know, it's really important for us to get real. I mean, we can't, those were those business model things that we got away with in the 70s and the 80s and 90s, not working now. You know, now we got to like go, no, we have 5 seconds to solve this problem. So what is the problem? Okay, what are we going to do about it? Who's in charge? By when? Got it. You know, so having a retreat where we sit around and ponder our navels for 3 days, it just isn't going to cut it anymore.
And, of course, one of the pluses of the economy being as it is, if you want to put it that way, is that it does focus the organization into making the changes that they probably should have been making long ago and got them into the mess that many of them are in right now.
Yeah, I always say thank God for a good recession. It gets us all sharpened up, and it makes us much, much, much better business people because people get sloppy during good times. You know, you stop paying attention to the rules, and history repeats itself. I mean, there's just no surprises here. I spoke at bank conferences for years and years and years, and I've been going, dude, you know, like you're not supposed to ever lend out more than 80% of the market value of a home, right? Why? What you doing with this 105% stuff? You don't? Do you think this isn't going to catch up with you? I mean, there are principles in life. You know, whether you believe in gravity or not, it works. Well, so do business principles, and nobody spends the time to figure out what are the principles and how do we apply them and how do we make sure that they're applied. Recessions are the time where you get the 2x4 between the eyes when you're not playing by the principles, and it forces you to have a faster adjustment time.
And as a supporter of good ethical business, I think that people let ethics get away from them as well in an attempt to chase something that was elusive that wound up costing them in the end, because good ethical business is also good business.
That is so true, and you know, I always say that people make decisions based of one of two emotions, because every emotion has a root emotion, and the root emotion is always either fear or love. Now, when you make decisions out of fear, you can pretty much count that it's going to come back to haunt. But when you make a decision out of love, you know, so the decision out of fear was, well, we better take that account, even though he's going to be impossible to work with, and even though it's not fair, and even though we're charging him too much, and even though they'll probably figure that out, we need the business. Okay, so that's a fear decision. A love decision is that client needs help. We need to step in and help them. How can we get a massive ROI for them? How can we turn around their business or their life or their whatever, depending upon what you have to offer? That's the way to make decisions. And you know, one of the things I caution people about during a recession is the temptation to make decisions based upon fear is huge. Stay awake. Stay awake, stay awake, stay awake, because it will come back to collect its dues.
And, of course, in banking, one of the old adages that was long forgotten was that a loan shouldn't be made to someone that wasn't a good deal for the borrower, not just for the lender.
Oh, and there were some hideous deals that were being made that were so inappropriate that it should have been stopped a long, long time ago. And so you're right. You know, and you know, and that, again, the word ethics is one of those ambiguous words. It's like anybody on death row thinks that they did their thing for the right reason. So, again, ethics is hard for people to wrap their arms around. And so that's where we need to create more clarity about what is appropriate behavior. What you know, and that's where you have to go to a deeper level of wisdom for people. You know, everybody's trying to train people. I'm done training people. I want to educate them how to be. I'm not going to train them how to do. When you treat people, when you teach them how to be, their lives are transformed forever, and so are their businesses. And that's a principle that we just don't seem to be getting, and people are still like ramping up training budgets and teaching them how to do. And it's like, okay, there are some things you need to teach them how to do, but boy, you better be putting your resources into teaching people how to be.
Many people will point to their job description, and they'll say that it's not their job to be a thank God it's Monday type employee and to be nice to everyone, especially if they've made previous attempts at changes that were cut short or even punished or and definitely weren't rewarded. That they're as they would say, they're paying me minimum wage now, and no matter how well I treat customers, I'll be paid minimum wage then.
So the commitment is, let's just keep the misery going?
Yes.
Yeah, I do just ask people, how's that working for you? I mean, let's talk about people who do that will be the same people that when they're sitting on the unemployment line, they're going to be saying, well, how did I get here? And I can't believe those SOBs did this to me. And the reality is very, very few times do people do something to you. We do it to ourselves. And so even though you hit a stall, know you're going to hit stalls. I mean, of course you're going to hit stalls. You are a human. You're going to run into people who don't get you. You're going to want to try to do something right, and people will try to stop you. You're going to build something and have this beautiful thing built, and they're going to want to take it away. Okay, all this is normal. All this is just the way it is. So the key here is, how do you keep things going? How do you take the stand, and how do you keep your own spirit going to stay alive and passionate? And that's why the Thank God It's Monday.com website with those audios keep people hooked in. And that's why we offer, I do something once a year called Permission to Be Extraordinary just for CEOs, and I have another one just for top-level executives. It's about, how do you be the kind of leader that is unstoppable in transforming an organization? How do you get yourself out of the way? Because every one of us has been scarred. I mean, if you had a perfectly functional family, then a teacher got to you, or a bully got to you, or the school bus driver got to you, or your nun got to you. Somebody got to you. And every time somebody gets you, they take a little chip out of your soul. And by the time many people get to the workplace, their soul is so chipped and so damaged and so beat up that their only mechanism is to beat up on other people. And that's the kind of stuff that has to be healed, not in a touchy-feely kumbaya, let's spend 45 years trying to get this thing figured out and do studies or whatever. It's like a one-day kick-butt-kick-off, let's get this transformed. Let's make some commitments. I don't care who hurt you in the past. You're going to stop hurting people. That's the commitment we're going to make. Nobody gets away with this, and every one of us will hold everybody. We're going to call them all tight. If someone doesn't play by these rules, we'll call you tight. That's our job, is to make sure everybody lives by these rules.
I've often noticed that along with happy employees being much more productive at their job, that they'll also initiate new products and new services and new ideas as well. Is this often the case in great organizations?
I think that people are naturally creative, that we make them creatively constipated when we create all the chaos within the organization. And so when people are happy, their brain thinks of things. They think, well, what if we did this? Well, how about that? Well, I see an opportunity there, and it's fun for them. They want to be creative. They want to bring that value. I mean, you know you're in trouble when you have a bunch of people who are saying, oh, management will never listen to me. Well, that may be true, and there may have been some incidences that management did that, and that's not good, and there's no excuse for that, and there's no excuse for you giving up either. I used to have a young woman that reported to me years and years ago when I was running a bank, and she was the director of marketing, and she went into the guy who owned the holding company. Would come in every morning. He would walk right by the tellers, never make eye contact, never knew their names, never talked to them. He would just go into his office and start looking at reports. And so one day she went trouncing into his office. She didn't even talk to me about it first. Went trouncing into his office, and she said, Dwayne, hey, when you do that, I know you're the nicest guy in the world, but, you know, it looks like you don't care. You're not making eye contact. You don't seem to know their names. You don't seem to be showing you care. Can you stop 10 seconds by them every morning and just kind of say, hey, how's it going, before you go to your desk? And he said, sure. And she said, well, because if you don't do that, how are we going to teach them to be nice to our customers? He goes, okay, I get it. And he was forever transformed. Now, she could have been the victim that said, oh, Dwayne, he's such a loser. I mean, he doesn't get it. Poor me. Management never listens to me. Somebody should do something. And gone into that, all that garbage that people say that keep their organizations dysfunctional. So good for her and good for you for doing it too.
Many of us have started at the very bottom of the organization. In fact, I've started myself at so low with the organization at minimum wage that I looked up to literally everybody in the company. And my view was to do the best job I possibly could at that position because that was what I just wanted to do because it was the right thing to do.
You raise a really good point. I've been talking to a lot of college students lately about how to go get a great job. And I say to them, find the company you want to work for and tell them you want to work in the mailroom. And if they don't want to hire you, tell them you'll work for free. And then when you're delivering the mail, then say, hey, would it be okay if I were to open your mail and begin to draft some of the responses to save you some time? Well, pretty soon the CEO is going to be moving you up and you'll be senior vice president because you have now solved his or her biggest problem, which, correspondence, and that's taken care of. Now, what's the next thing? You go in, you see what isn't there, and you make it happen. That's the magic. And so clearly you got to where you arrived is because you saw what wasn't there and made it happen. You didn't wait for someone to tell you what to do. You saw it, you moved, you cleaned it up, you moved it through, and that's powerful, and that's fun, and that's the way it's got to be.
And your philosophy fits in with one that I've always had that I know it personally from being way up there in the corporate world is that everyone has real problems to be solved and I know many managers and executives who go to bed every night and their big dream is that somebody will walk through that door tomorrow morning and solve some of those unsolvable problems. And I've always maintained that the people that can solve those problems are right there in the organization if you let them help you.
Exactly. And people have the role, too, of if they get disheartened because someone doesn't allow them to solve a problem, they need to take a stand, too. And that's the victim thing that employees will go into. They'll say, well, my boss doesn't listen to me. But just because the boss didn't listen to you that one time, maybe you didn't present it well, maybe you didn't make a concise argument, maybe you didn't show the three different options and which was the best option, maybe you didn't lay it out in a way that made sense, it doesn't mean they didn't listen to you. It just means that they didn't get it. And so what was your role in that, and how could you go back and get it done? That's the thinking. That's what I'm talking about. The whole none of this, oh, poor is me, nobody's listening to me. None of that gets to get by anymore, because when we're in charge of our lives, when we're living powerfully, then it's juicy, then it's fun, then it's good. But we've given up our passion to do that because we have been conditioned to be martyrs and victims in the workplace. And that's just, it's time for that to stop, and I am committed to that stopping.
And, of course, you're also committed to helping people help not only themselves but also their customers solve their problems. And one of the beautiful things about when you help customers solve their problems, they will help you as well, because they're very happy to not only return with but also to bring all of their friends.
And what a way is that to develop business? You know, the old traditional methods of marketing are really pretty dead these days. And so, you know, billboards and newspaper ads and all those kind of things were you know, they had their day, and there may be occasionally some purpose for them. But what's really, we've really gone back to a world where it's about people talking to people and referring things. And so the best invested marketing dollars are in your people and getting them to think right, be of massive service, understand how to really help people, and to measure those things and reward those things and have fun doing those things and make sure you have the right people in the right slots. That's where marketing dollars need to go. And I remember back when I took economics course, I had an amazing economics professor who said, if you're ever in a recession, if you're ever just about to shut your doors, spend your last marketing dollars or your last dollars on marketing. Now, I would put an addendum onto what he said, and I would say, do that and make sure that those dollars are spent on the highest rate of return that you can make in marketing these days, which is in getting your people to do what they're supposed to do. Because you can go get all the leads you want by putting ads in the paper and such, but when they walk in the door and they don't get it and they don't see you having that fire in your belly, then it's like having a big hole in the bottom of the bucket. And I don't care how much water you put in the top of the bucket, it's not staying.
And, of course, even the most financially strapped company and business is not in a situation where they can't treat their customers well and treat them with a smile and treat them with dignity and be happy to answer the phone and be nice to them. That doesn't cost anything.
Not only does it not cost anything, and not only do the customers think it's great, but people feel good about themselves when they're being good to people. So, you know, if you walk into business and nobody's making eye contact and all you see is parts, they're not engaged. But if people are looking up and going, hey, how's it going? Great to see you. Way to come. Well, come on in. Here we go. That's when the magic happens. And so that's where masterful things happen, is when you get people to get that their job is to blow customers away by adding great value to them. And if they get that one thing and only that one thing, everything else aligns.
It's great to blow customers away with great customer service, as opposed to blowing them off with terrible service, right?
Yes, I think that's probably very true. And unfortunately, the other seems to be the alternative. People are shocked and dismayed. I tried returning something the other day in a store, and because they had given me the wrong thing. And not only did they give it to me once, but they gave it to me twice wrong. And so when I went to go return it, she goes, oh, no, that's what you wanted. See, here, you bought it here. And I said, well, I know that's what went through the system and what went in the bag, but that's not what I bought. and that's why I want to return it. She's like, no, we can't return it because that's what you bought. And I'm like, oh, man, this is just not going well. So finally I just walked away, and I just thought, I'm going to vote with my pocketbook. I will not be back. So I was lost $40 in not getting my returns out of that, but what they lost is probably $2,000 to $3,000 of lifetime customer value.
Just by saying you bought it, you got it, they've also lost all of your future business.
Yeah, the only words they didn't say behind it was, you idiot, you. So they missed that part, but it was implied, and I got it.
Do you like that, you bought it, you got it?
Yeah, that was good. I'll have that in my next book. Thanks a lot, Wayne. I'll write that one down.
Well, feel free. I didn't invent it, so... What gives employees and customers cause to celebrate and to be happy and to have fun at work and to enjoy getting out of bed in the morning and saying, I'm excited to go to work, as opposed to, oh, no, I've got to go to work again?
Well, winning is fun. Winning is always fun. You know, I always think about, you know, we've raised a potload of kids here. Our last one just graduated from high school, so we're just about off the soccer field now, although one of our sons is going to be playing D1 next year. In college, we've spent a lot of hours on that soccer field, and I remember when they were little kids, and, you know, they're all, you know, here's little Billy and Jeannie and whatever, and they're all playing on the field together, and here they are, neighbors and best friends and whatever, but they split into two teams, and suddenly our team are the good people, and that team is the bad people, and they're just in the first grade, but we now know that they're the bad people. Well, if you tap into that psychology, what's going on there is that people just want to win no matter what. Well, if you use that psychology to engage people, magical things happen, because if you say, okay, here's how you win, here's the five things that you're going to be measured on, and every day we're going to celebrate your successes, we're going to celebrate the team's successes in those five things, and they start to see the successes, and they start ringing the bell, and they start high-fiving each other, that's fun, that's good, that's the way it's supposed to be, and that's when the magic is really so vibrating through the air that people can just feel it. So it's not just about fun is not frivolous. It is a bottom line issue, and I believe in times like this only the fun survive.
Back in my creative thinking days, I used to have everybody in the organization that was involved in the situation, which of course was, I didn't consider a problem, I considered an opportunity, and which, of course, is a different way of approaching things anyway. I always considered every problem to be a gift, opportunity of a way to do things better. And, of course, everyone would contribute all kinds of ideas, some of them, and we'd always have a great time doing it. And, of course, they would be very committed to making those ideas work because they were asked for their help, and they want to make sure that their ideas succeed.
Exactly. And even if it is your idea, if you can make it feel like it's somebody else's idea, all the better. Now you have two people agree, so the chances of it getting accomplished go way up.
And people will work harder to make their what they feel are their own ideas work as opposed to ones that are handed down as dictums from on high.
I have a quote in the book by Onassis, and one of the things that he said was the secret to business is knowing something that no one else knows. Well, I think there's a lot of truth to that, and I think that one of the things that seems just so obvious and so powerful is that when you have people who are alive and passionate to get something done, and they come together with a team full of people like that, that you can walk through walls for each other. You'll make things happen. And so, you know, it's about having it be their idea. It's about having them have fun with it. It's about having the joy of man, we just scored on that one, and whoa, we just got that one. I mean, go to the soccer field and watch how people cheer when the score hits the scoreboard and people go nuts. That's the feeling that we have to bring into the workplace so it starts to get fun again.
And isn't it great when you can get other people cheering for each other's success and become, and especially when they were the people before that were spent all their time doing gossip and backbiting and so on.
Yeah, and what's funny is, you know, in the book it talks about the conversation. So one of the Thank God's Money principles is that if somebody has a bad attitude and it doesn't seem to be in, that anybody can say to them, say, Wayne, I'm so excited about where this team is going, and my sense is that you don't share that excitement, and that's okay, because maybe this isn't your thing. But if this isn't your thing, Wayne, you got to go find your thing. Life is short. And what it really forces you to do, Wayne, is to make a decision. Are you in or are you out? Either one's a good choice, but it sounds like you got to make a decision. And that in itself is the line in the sand that says, listen, I'm taking a stand for my workplace. I want to work with people who want to be here. You know, you have to get to go to work, not have to go to work. You get to go home and be with your kids, not have to. You know, people have forgotten how to get to. They're all in the mode of have to. And if we just shift that one way of thinking to I get to go make dinner now. I get to go for a run. I get to go exercise so I don't end up weighing 500 pounds. I get to go eat some vegetables so I have more energy. I get to go to work and make a difference. I get to go give a report to my boss and share the good news. I get to go give a report to my boss and tell him the bad news, and here's my plan to correct that. You know, when we get to, it changes everything.
What is the first step that a person should take when they get up tomorrow morning toward creating change, towards creating a great workplace?
I'd have them buy that book, that Thank God It's Monday box of books, and get them distributed in your office. But if they don't have the budget for the whole box, get one, you know, and get started. Start with yourself. But secondly, I'd have them go to the website, the thankgodsmoney.com website, and listen to those audios. They really make a huge impact. Our clients just rave about the difference that those make. So those are really good first steps. And then watch your vocabulary. Start taking out words like "I can't" "it won't happen" and "they won't listen to me," and start bringing in the language of "how can we, how can we, how can we, how can we," as opposed to "why we can't, why we can't, why we can't, why we can't." Those are amazingly powerful first steps that really make things happen.
Henry Ford once said that if you say "I can" or "I can't," you'll be right either way.
You know, I think Henry Ford was a very, very bright man, and I believe he was right.
And what is next for Roxanne Emmerich?
Well, I'm having a ball, so it's all good, and so if everything stays the same, that's good. I'm still in pinch-me mode that the book is New York Times bestseller and Wall Street Journal bestseller, and it's doing all those things, and I think what I want this to be now is I want this to be more than just Roxanne Emmerich. I want this to be a movement. I want different countries, leaders in different countries saying, I'm taking a stand for making sane workplaces again. Because, you know, yes, we have poverty around us, but the biggest poverty we have is in our spirit. And it's time, you know, when you look at the statistics for depression, and you have to ask yourself, where does this come from? And since people spend more time at work than any place else, you got to ask yourself, what are we doing to each other that hurts so much that we have to medicate ourselves to get through the day? And so what's important to me in my lifetime is for us to end the craziness in the workplace and start having fun again and start evolving as humans in the workplace and high-fiving and having a blast and deciding to have the joy. That's what matters to me next, and that's my next agenda.
And how can we find you on the Internet, Roxanne?
Oh, I'm all over the place. I have a thankgodit'smoney.com blog. I have lots of articles up all over the place. I've got videos up on YouTube. I've got they can go to my Roxanne Emmerich site or my Thank God It's Monday site, or if they're a bank, they can go to the Emmerich Financial site. So there's all kinds of places that people can go to find, but they just type in my name, Roxanne Emmerich, and it's E-M-M-E-R-I-C-H. So it's got a rich on the end, and E-M-M-E-R-I, rich, or is the place to go, and Roxanne is R-O-X-A-N-N-E. They're going to find lots of tools, lots of free examples, lots of free tools that I have up on the website, too, that they can use right away to make some things happen. And I encourage them to take those steps and get signed up for some things that will really help them make those shifts.
And, of course, you're also on Twitter.
I'm on Twitter. And I should also mention, too, that I'm doing a new program this year called Lead the Transformation, which is just for people who want to come together to transform their organizations and transform themselves. And I'm very excited to be doing that. I've been doing programs like this just for one industry for 20 years, but I'm finally opening it up to all industries. Again, I'd only done these transformational programs other than the kickoff for the financial services industry. But now that we're opening it up, we're getting a huge response because people really need that kind of thing during times like this.
Now, I'm following you on Twitter, of course, because you're really easy to find. It's just your name, at Roxanne Emmerich, so that's easy to find.
And they can follow me on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn. I've got all kinds of things going on all at the same time.
Well, that's great. And thanks so much for taking the time to speak with us tonight, Roxanne.
Thank you for having me. It's been a joy. I'd be happy to come back.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun talking about creating great workplaces.
It is, and Wayne, I hope that you get to say thank God it's Monday every day, and if you're not, you let me know who I need to talk to there. We'll get that taken care of.
And thanks to everyone for tuning in to this edition of Blog Business Success here on Blog Talk Radio. And tonight our guest was Roxanne Emmerich. And she's a multiple award-winning entrepreneur, and she's the best-selling author of the visionary and corporate culture-changing book, Thank God It's Monday, How to Create a Workplace You and Your Customers Love. And it's a book that I recommend, and Roxanne shared her secrets for making your workplace fun and a joy for employees to be on the job. She's told us how to improve employee morale, lift spirits, and create a positive employment atmosphere. Thanks again, Roxanne.
Thank you very much, and thank you to everyone for being on the line and giving me your valuable time. I hope that this time together will help you make a commitment to really make a huge shift that pays for you financially and that fills your soul with all kinds of happy laughter and joy.
And everyone will be saying, thank God, it's Monday, Tuesday, and all the way till Friday.
It's okay to say thank God it's Friday, too. Thanks, Wayne.
And thanks to everyone for tuning in. Good night.